Hello and welcome to the ScrapGov Scrap and DD&D Ron Paul updates. Basically, give you a quick rundown. Our ScrapGov Scrap podcast and our DD&D podcast are on Sunday evenings. ScrapGov Scrap podcast is between 7 and 9 p.m. and the DD&D podcast is between 9:30 and midnight. Now, Ron Paul doesn't always update his updates on Sunday, and therefore I'm doing a midweek update for Ron Paul. And then maybe Sunday we'll have David Ray's commentary. And Ron Paul may update his update on Sunday, and basically we would lose this week's update because he didn't update it last week on Sunday. So sometimes we'll have a repeat, and sometimes we may lose one of his updates. So I'm trying to do a Ron Paul update on a Wednesday. And maybe in the future we'll change the ScrapGov Scrap podcast to another day. Probably both of them to another day. That way it's convenient. Anywho, we're going to call Ron Paul right now. And here we go.
Number 8. Last week, the United States, Mexico, and Canada agreed to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, with a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. Sadly, instead of replacing NAFTA's managed trade with true free trade, the new USMCA expands government control over trade. For example, under the USMCA's rules of origin, at least 75% of a car's parts must be from the United States, Canada, or Mexico in order to avoid tariffs. This is nothing more than protectionism designed to raise prices of cars using materials from outside North America. The USMCA also requires that 40 to 45% of an automobile's content be made by workers earning at least $16 per hour. Like all government-set wages, this requirement will increase prices and decrease employment. The USMCA also requires Mexico to pass legislation to recognize the right of collective bargaining. In other words, this so-called free trade agreement forces Mexico to import U.S.-style compulsory unionism. If the Mexican legislature does not comply, the U.S. and Canada will impose tariffs on Mexican goods. The USMCA also requires the three countries to abide by the International Labor Organization, the ILO, standards for workers' rights. So if, for example, the bureaucrats at the ILO declares that right-to-work laws violates international labor standards because they weaken collective bargaining and give right-to-work states an unfair advantage over compulsory unionism in states and countries, the federal government may have to nullify all state right-to-work laws. The USMCA also obligated the three countries to work together to improve air quality. This sounds harmless, but could be used as a backdoor way to impose costly new regulations and taxes, such as cap and trade schemes, on America. This agreement also forbids the use of currency devaluation as a means of attempting to gain a competitive advantage in international trade. Enforcement of this provision will be difficult, if not impossible, as no central bank will ever admit to devaluing currency to obtain a competitive advantage in international trade. Of course, the very act of creating money lowers its value, so the only way to stop central banks from devaluing the currency is to put them out of business. Sadly, I don't think the drafters of the USMCA seem to restore free market money. The currency provision will likely be used to justify coordination of monetary policy between the Federal Reserve and the Mexican and Central Banks of Canada. This will lead to region-wide inflation and a global currency war as the U.S. pressures Mexico and Canada to help the Fed counter other countries' alleged currency manipulation and challenges to the dollar's reserve currency status. A true free trade deal would simply reduce or eliminate tariffs and other trade barriers. It would not dictate wages, labor standards, and require intergovernmental cooperation or environmental standards or monetary policy. A true free trade deal also would not, as the USMCA does, list acceptable names for types of cheeses. Those of us who support real free trade must not let supporters of the USMCA get...
To repeat the announcement, press 1. To repeat the announcement, press 1. To repeat the announcement, press 1.
Wow, okay, there's a lot of stuff there. Only one or two of the things actually sounded any good. I don't even know where to start. Okay, basically, NAFTA was the beginning of this whole New World Order, North American Union deal. You know, we got the European Union. Now they're trying to do the North American Union. Then they're going to try to do, I think it's called the African Union, and then the Asian Union or something like that. And then the final step would be basically the New World Order, the United whatever. So, you know, it's like we have the United States of, or the United Soviet States of America. Now we're working on the North American Union, so the United countries of North America, basically. Devaluing the dollar. Well, basically, that's what they've been working on. They've already lowered the U.S. dollar to the Canadian standard for this purpose. And they're working on lowering the Canadian and the U.S. dollar down to the Mexican standard for this purpose. They want to devalue the dollar. They want to devalue the currency, and that way they can make... the value of the currency equal across the North American Union. Now, that being said, they are trying to raise, as you heard in the recording, they're trying to raise the value of the dollar in Mexico. But they're raising taxes, they're raising tariffs, they're raising the cost of living. So really, all that stuff devalues our dollar, no matter how fictitiously they raise the value of the dollar. So if they bring the Mexican standard up and bring the U.S. and Canadian standard down, but increase inflation and increase taxes and increase tariffs, and increase, I forgot what it's called whenever you pay a duty. I think it's called a duty. When you pay a tax for transporting goods across the border, yeah, anyway, so... Because, like, for example, the Canadians, I have aromatherapy products, and I used to keep them in a little toolbox, and I'd have some, you know, small bottles and or vials that I would transfer. You know, I'd have like the bigger bottles in the bottom, which was like 1 or 2 ounce bottles in the bottom, and in the top where you put the small tools, I had the small aromatherapy stuff that I might need, which I need to start doing that again. I kind of gotten away from that. But anyways, on my way to Canada, one time this lady, she deemed my aromatherapy commercial and tried to make me pay a tax on it to take it over into Canada. Whenever it was for personal use. I might sell $5 or $10 worth of oil here and there, but I don't really make any money off of that. But because I made the mistake of saying that, she ended up saying, "Oh, well, this is commercial. You got to pay a tax." I was like, "Fuck your tax." So I found somebody who would let me store it for free on the U.S. side of the border, and I stored it there until I got back into the U.S., and then I picked it back up. So I got around that tax, but it still cost me a couple hours, you know, which is a pain in the butt. So anyway, so, yeah, that's an example of the border tax, or whatever you want to call it. Everywhere you go, they tax us. They're looking for new ways to get more money out of us so that they can have more money and we don't. You know, they're trying to figure out how to, you know, it's kind of like, I think it was Zig Ziglar said one time when he first started becoming a businessman, and he went to one of those seminars. This guy came out on stage and he says, first thing he said was, "You need to remember one thing. Those people have your money in their pocket, and you got to figure out how to get it without going to jail." Well, basically, that's what they're doing. They think that our money is their money, and they got to figure out how to get it out of our pockets and into theirs. And you know, they use criminal acts in order to do it, but they make those criminal acts legal, therefore they're no longer criminal. But it's still criminal. So, anyway, so the North American Union, devaluing the dollar, once they devalue the dollar enough and get the standard even across the board, about that time is when they're going to announce the Amero. They've already got the Amero. They've already kind of sort of tried to get it out there, but it really kind of didn't fly. So the Ameros that they made, if you can get your hands on them, are actually kind of souvenirs now. They're like collector's pieces. They were made around 2000, the beginning of the millennium, basically. I think around 2005, 2007, somewhere around there. Between 2000 and 2010 was when the Ameros were made. So if you can get your hands on those, they're going to be pretty valuable, even though they should be pretty worthless. I mean, the future ones will be worthless, but these ones will actually be collector's pieces because technically they're not supposed to exist. Nobody knows, well, not nobody, but most people don't even know they exist. So, yeah, if you can get your hands on some of those, bada-boom. But anyhow, that is part of the North American Union agenda. You know, basically they want to devalue the dollar. They want to make the U.S., Canada, and Mexico one nation. And then they can work on other countries, other nations, you know, like the North or the African one and so on and so forth. Give me a second. I got to do my logbook. And then I'm at my delivery or my pickup, so I gotta scan in. La di da, la di da. Oh, that's not the one I'm looking for. It is this one. Yes. All right, while I'm scanning in and doing my paperwork, I'll do the Ron Paul update again to go over some of the multiple things that he went over. So I touched on the two things that came to mind first, and so we'll find out what those other ones were.
For Monday, October 8th. Last week, the United States, Mexico, and Canada agreed to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, with a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, USMCA. Sadly, instead of replacing NAFTA's managed trade with true free trade, the new USMCA expands government control over trade. For example, one of the USMCA's rules of origin: at least 75% of a car's parts must be from the United States, Canada, or Mexico in order to avoid tariffs. This is nothing more than protectionism designed to raise prices of cars using materials from outside North America. The USMCA also requires that 40 to 45% of an automobile's content be made by workers earning at least $16 per hour. Like all government-set wages, this requirement will increase prices and decrease employment. The USMCA also requires Mexico to pass legislation to recognize the right of collective bargaining. In other words, this so-called free trade agreement forces Mexico to import U.S.-style compulsory unionism. If the Mexican legislature...
All right. I'm going to stop it right there for now. And basically, now those two or three things kind of sound good. Forcing more products to be purchased in the North American Union, within the North American Union, does help to create jobs for us. But, you know, still, we're going to have parts made in other countries because they're going to be cheaper. So, the tariffs are going to basically raise the price of imports from other countries. So, either way, the price of the cars are going to go up. Now, if the tariffs cost more than what it would be to employ somebody in the North American Union, then it would create more jobs in the North American Union. But we don't know. That's kind of up in the air. Now, let's see. The other one was forcing the, $16 an hour, forcing people who work on cars to make, or to build car parts to pay their employees at least $16 an hour. We talked about this the other day on our Scrap Gov Scrap podcast, I believe. where the government way back when said, the government put a cap on how much you could pay employees. And so then, that basically encouraged other things like insurance and life insurance and retirement and stuff like that, because those employers that were paying better had to come up with other ways of giving incentives for people to come work for them. So insurance and stuff like that was their incentive. But no, this is actually more like minimum wage. It's basically placing a minimum wage on what you can pay your employees if they work on cars. So the government is basically trying to change the minimum wage standards and say, okay, if you work in this type of an industry, this is the minimum wage. And if you work in this type of an industry, this is a minimum wage, which sounds good, but it may or may not be. Anytime the government interferes with, sticks our nose in our business, it's usually not any good. I'm at the sand plant, and I got to open my top. So I'll probably play Ron Paul again while I do that so that you don't have dead air. unions. Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. Unions used to be a good thing, but they're just as corrupt as the government. So all that does is encourage more corruption. So anyhow, let's go back to the Ron Paul update while I open the top of my boxes.
For Monday, October 8th. Last week, the United States, Mexico, and Canada agreed to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, with a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. Sadly, instead of replacing NAFTA's managed trade with true free trade, the new USMCA expands government control over trade. For example, under the USMCA's rules of origin, at least 75% of a car's parts must be from the United States, Canada, or Mexico in order to avoid tariffs. This is nothing more than protectionism designed to raise prices of cars using materials from outside North America. The USMCA also requires that 40 to 45% of an automobile's content be made by workers earning at least $16 per hour. Like all government-set wages, this requirement will increase prices and decrease employment. The USMCA also requires Mexico to pass legislation to recognize the right of collective bargaining. In other words, this so-called free trade agreement forces Mexico to import U.S.-style compulsory unionism. If the Mexican legislature does not comply, the U.S. and Canada will impose tariffs on Mexican goods. The USMCA also requires the three countries to abide by the International Labor Organization, the ILO, standards for workers' rights. So if, for example, the bureaucrats at the ILO declares that right-to-work laws violates international labor standards because they weaken collective bargaining and give right-to-work states an unfair advantage over compulsory unionism in states and countries, the federal government may have to nullify all state right-to-work laws. The USMCA also obligated the three countries to work together to improve air quality. This sounds harmless, but could be used as a backdoor way to impose costly new regulations and taxes, such as cap and trade schemes, on America. This agreement also forbids the use of currency devaluation as a means of attempting to gain a competitive advantage in international trade. Enforcement of this provision will be difficult, if not impossible, as no central bank will ever admit to devaluing currency to obtain a competitive advantage in international trade.
Okay, yeah. Basically, yeah, they don't ever admit to devaluing currency because that makes them look bad. But they do it all the time. Our dollar's worth maybe 5 cents, 10 cents at the best, if we're lucky. I don't know. It's practically worthless. It's not backed by gold anymore. We already know that. And, yeah, it's kind of screwed up. Anyways, the weather. We already know that the EPA is doing a crappy job as we speak. Why do we want to give the EPA and those people more power? Because they suck. It sounds like a good thing, you know. Oh, yeah, tree huggers, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm a tree hugger. You know, I may not sound like one sometimes because, for example, I'm a truck driver working in the oil field. right now, I'm actually hauling sand. That's basically what I do. So I've got these like sandboxes. I don't actually work for Sandbox Logistics anymore, but I'm working for a third party for a company called Prop X. But basically, yeah, we all sand. Frack sand, to be more specific, for fracking. And people think that's a bad thing, and maybe it is. We talk about that on another podcast, and if you want to talk about that on a future podcast, you can call in Sunday after 7, between 7 and 9, and we could talk about that. you know, well, actually between 7 and midnight, because we do our DD&D podcast between 9:30 and midnight, and fracking isn't necessarily a government topic. Although it could be, because Big Brother, Big Oil, Big Business, Big Pharma, Big Agra, they're all in bed together. So that subject could go either way. But it's probably a more of a DD&D podcast subject. So anyways, but yeah, you can find our phone number on ScrapGov, scrap.com, or DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. So air quality, yeah, we do like our air quality, but Big Business, Big Brother, and Big Pharma, and Big Agra are all in bed together, so why would the government stop these big businesses from polluting if air quality was really a concern? You know, they want to control everything. They say that they care about our health and they care about our water, and so they put fluoride in our water because it's supposedly good for our teeth. And when it's actually bad for your teeth, bad for your mental and physical health. Fluoride, if not causes diabetes, it actually makes it worse. Fluoride is also what Hitler put in his water to subdue his victims, to make them more controllable. Well, what's in our water? Fluoride. Same thing. Our government's doing to us the same thing that Hitler did to his people. But it's okay for, you know, Uncle Sam to do it. Anyways, chemtrails. You know, there's a lot of controversy over chemtrails. And the government for a long time denied having anything to do with it. Now they admit to doing it. But they pretty much got 100% control over it, and they've got people convinced that they're harmless. What I think, there's a lot of theories on what chemtrails are. Personally, what I think chemtrails are is big business getting rid of those toxicities, you know, those toxins, those pollution. So instead of dumping it in the ocean or in landfills, they're now dumping it in the air over our heads. So, of course, the government wants to be in charge of air quality so they can regulate when and where they want to dump these chemicals on our heads. Now, I agree and disagree with dumping them in the air. All these chemicals came from the earth. Now, they weren't in a concentrated form to make them toxic chemicals, but they all came from the earth. And if you spread them out evenly across the earth, they'll go back to the earth, and the earth will basically reabsorb it and reorganize it and take it and put it where it needs to go. Therefore, spreading them evenly distributing them across the sky and letting them fall randomly onto the earth, in theory, is actually probably the best way to get rid of pollution. That being said, we have too much pollution. We have too many chemicals. So this is maybe a solution, but the problem is we're still producing way too many of these toxic chemicals. Therefore, it increases the amount of distribution that we have to get rid of. And we have to come up with creative ways of getting rid of it. Well, the more we create, the more of a problem it's going to be. Now, if we evenly distributed all these toxic wastes across the airwaves once a year or in minute amounts throughout the year, it wouldn't be so big of a deal. But they're doing it every day in large quantities. And you and I are paying for it because the government's in control of it. And who pays the government's bills? We do. So, the government is stepping in, and we are paying for big business to get rid of all their toxic waste that they shouldn't really be creating in the first place. Why are we paying for that? Okay. Anyways, let's go back to Ron Paul and see if there's anything else we want to talk about. And then I guess we will do this again on Sunday with David's input. And maybe this one will be available on Sunday. Or if not, he will update his recording and we'll have a new one on Sunday.
October 8th. Last week, the United States, Mexico, and Canada agreed to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, with a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, USMCA. Sadly, instead of replacing NAFTA's managed trade with true free trade, the new USMCA expands government control over trade. For example, one of the USMCA's rules of origin, at least 75% of a car's parts must be from the United States, Canada, or Mexico in order to avoid tariffs. This is nothing more than protectionism designed to raise prices of cars using materials from outside North America. The USMCA also requires that 40 to 45% of an automobile's content be made by workers earning at least $16 per hour. Like all government-set wages, this requirement will increase prices and decrease employment. The USMCA also requires Mexico to pass legislation to recognize the right of collective bargaining. In other words, this so-called free trade agreement forces Mexico to import U.S.-style compulsory unionism. If the Mexican legislature does not comply, the U.S. and Canada will impose tariffs on Mexican goods. The USMCA also requires the three countries to abide by the International Labor Organization, the ILO, standards for workers' rights. So if, for example, the bureaucrats at the ILO declares that right-to-work laws violates international labor standards because they weaken collective bargaining and give right-to-work states an unfair advantage over compulsory unionism in states and countries, the federal government may have to nullify all state right-to-work laws. The USMCA also obligated the three countries to work together to improve air quality. This sounds harmless, but could be used as a backdoor way to impose costly new regulations and taxes, such as cap and trade schemes, on America. This agreement also forbids the use of currency devaluation as a means of attempting to gain a competitive advantage in international trade. Enforcement of this provision will be difficult, if not impossible, as no central bank will ever admit to devaluing currency to obtain a competitive advantage in international trade. Of course, the very act of creating money lowers its value, so the only way to stop central banks from devaluing the currency is to put them out of business. Sadly, I don't think the drafters of the USMCA seem to restore free market money. The currency provision will likely be used to justify coordination of monetary policy between the Federal Reserve and the Mexican and Central Banks of Canada. This will lead to region-wide inflation and a global currency war as the U.S. pressures Mexico and Canada to help the Fed counter other countries' alleged currency manipulation and challenges to the dollar's reserve currency status. A true free trade deal would simply reduce or eliminate tariffs and other trade barriers. It would not dictate wages, labor standards, and require intergovernmental cooperation or environmental standards or monetary policy. A true free trade deal also would not, as the USMCA does, list acceptable names for types of cheeses. Those of us who support real free trade must not let supporters of the USMCA get...
To repeat the announcement, press 1. To repeat the announcement, press 1.
All right, I guess that's it for the Ron Paul update. Hopefully he will update it at the beginning of our recording on Sunday. Because I really would like to get David Ray's commentary on it. But if so, oh well. I am recording it, so maybe I'll download it before Sunday and play it back on Sunday for him so that he can put in his 3 cents. But... Or just have him download it and listen to it himself and then put in his 3 cents. Take some notes. notes. So anyway, so there's our Ron Paul update. And I don't know. I guess maybe we should change our podcast to Monday. But we're trying to keep it standard. We've been doing it on Sunday for a while. But... I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Monday is the better day for our podcast so we can do the Ron Paul update and only have to do 2 podcasts instead of 3. Okay. Talk to you later. Oh, and like I said, call in if you have some stuff for us you want to discuss. Call in. We love to hear from our callers. We have 75 international phone numbers, So you can call from anywhere in North American Union or any other union for that matter. Okay. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.